Greg Morton is with us, the former quarterback who played 18 seasons in the National Football League. And as I pointed out a little bit earlier, he was the first quarterback in NFL history to start the Super Bowl for two different teams, Dallas in Super Bowl V and Denver in Super Bowl XII. I alluded before the break about the rivalries that exist. That NFC East rivalries, I mean, Philadelphia one week, New York the next week, Washington the next week. I don't know that I've ever seen division players in teams within a division with such rivalries. What was it like to play in that?
I agree. When we played Washington, it never failed. There would always Coach Landry just, I don't know if he was petrified of George Allen. He thought George Allen was always cheating. He was peeking on him. We had this hotel behind our practice field, and when we played Washington, the Cowboys rented out the whole hotel so nobody could stay there. If there was a helicopter that went over above us, he'd stop practice because he thought George Allen was up there. It's just crazy stuff that, you know, everybody just said, come on, coach, this is absurd. But great games with Washington. I mean, they were always, you know, the elite. The Giants were always very good. Philadelphia in those days, that was kind of a breather for us because they weren't very good. They always had the funky uniforms, and they just never knew where they were going to play. And they were great. Great. I remember one game in Washington that the great Kenny Houston – their free safety, or their strong safety. And we were on, like, the five-yard line and going in to win, and I tried to look him off, but he figured me out, so I threw a little short pass to Garrison. And Walt, I said, well, he's in the end zone. And Kenny came up and just hit Garrison, one of the great hits I've ever seen him. Caught him, like, on the one-inch line, and we didn't score, and they won the game. But we had those games all the time with Washington. And the same thing with the Giants, back and forth. I don't know. Until we started to the late 60s and 70s, we started, you know, having some consistency. St. Louis was also in there that was always a surprise because they always had such a great – they had a great team offensively, defensively. They never pull it together. Washington had a great team defensively, and then they had Jurgensen and Kilmer who could always seem to – when they needed to beat us. So, great rivalry with – with the Broncos, the Raiders, and Kansas City were the two. And when I was there, my 6 years with the Broncos, we really did well against the Raiders. We had, I don't know why, but we could play the Raiders, and we usually came out on top. Kansas City, we could beat pretty well, too. But there was a stretch there where we could kind of get those teams. San Diego, when they had Dan Fouts, there's another team that had, you know, phenomenal talent, but they never could get in the Super Bowl. You never figured out because they had a great defensive line. Of course, they had Danny Fouts, who's one of the great passers. So it just, that's, you know, a point that you made earlier. Everybody's got to be playing together, and everybody's got to do their job, or even the teams with great Hall of Famers don't get to the Super Bowl.
What did you find as the dynamics, the little nuances of playing in Denver as compared to playing down at sea level? Because everybody always talked about it. One thing I remember, I was doing a Denver Bronco game on CBS one day. We came in on Saturday, and I'll never forget it because it was snowing. And then on Sunday, it was 72 degrees.
Right. That's one of the nuances. The great thing is that the psychological fact that you're mile high, and they, you know, papers always led up to that. Guys would keep talking about it when the visiting writers would ask if you have any advantages. Yeah, we'll wait till they get here. In fact, the first game I played with Dallas, St. Louis was coming in, and we didn't know what kind of team we had. But they fell for the deal about mile high, and so they went down to Colorado Springs. They came in like about 5 days earlier, which is you can't do because that's when you're going to run out of gas. So in the fourth quarter, they really just lost the steam because they couldn't take the mile high. If you came in and played, it didn't bother you that much. You could go. But if you came in and stayed, it takes you a couple months to acclimate yourself to the mile high. But we had a little advantage because of the fans, too, the unbelievable fans. And everybody always says that for teams you play, what are the best fans? But we always had every game was a sellout, 76,000. There was never not a sellout. And these people went crazy. They painted their houses orange, their cars orange. Everything was orange, and because they'd never, when I got there in 77, they really never had any taste of big-time athletics. And it was a great city. I loved every second of it, and the people are crazy people, but they love their Broncos.
I want to make an observation here, and if I'm wrong, feel free to correct me on it, Craig, and that is that I don't think because of the sophistication, and you take a look at the stadiums with the club seating and the enclosed glass seating and everything, it's not like it used to be.
You're exactly right.
And I remember up in Metropolitan Stadium up in Minnesota, where, you know, I mean, you go in there, and I used to have some of the players tell me that were with the Vikings at that time, when they played San Diego or Miami, they always made sure they came out and they warmed up with short sleeve shirts.
Yeah, Bud Grant wouldn't let them wear anything. I mean, they would not have any top coats or anything. And that's the one thing that a football player always does, is that when you look at your schedule to spending gear, you look at where you're playing, like in December. You don't want to play in Cleveland,
Green Bay,
Buffalo, or Minnesota. You don't want to play in any of those places because they're the worst. Cleveland may be the, I don't know. Minnesota's pretty darn cold.
No, Cleveland, you're absolutely right. I remember when the Raiders beat the Cleveland Browns to become the first wild card team to go on and eventually win the Super Bowl. I was there covering that game. Sam Ratigliano was the coach there, and I'll never forget it because I was doing some of the play-by-play, and we opened the second half, and I won't tell you who was doing my color because you know him. He's a well-known ball player, and he had a wild guy, to say the least. But I said, well, as we open the second half here, I see it's minus 12 with a wind chill factor of minus 32. And I just left it right there, and I hear click, and he says, you know, Ronnie, at 32 degrees, your vital parts freeze. I'm thinking, where the hell is he going with it? And he says, at minus 32, they fall off, and your voice is getting a little high. I mean, that was part of the whole feel of professional football back then.
Yes, and the fields were not in good shape. Now it's like it's going to a Hollywood premiere. I mean, every week.
Showtime.
Yeah, it is showtime.
Let me ask you about one of your ball players who's one of my all-time favorites, Walt Garrison. Because Walt was a cowboy.
Right, he sure was.
And
Oklahoma
a good
State.
Cowboy.
Great cowboy. That's what he did in the off-season.
Yeah.
He bulldogged.
Yeah.
And let me just see. Walt Garrison stories. His nickname was Puddin'. Meredith named him Puddin'. So if you can see this big, tough cowboy coming in and everybody, hey, Puddin', what's happening? He used to, when the rookies would come in, he used to have this thing that he did on the rodeo circuit, evidently, is that he'd fill his mouth full of lighter fluid and light a match and blow it out, and it looked like a dragon was coming in. So sure enough, the rookies got the dragon, and I'm telling you, they went through windows. He'd come bursting in and strike that match, and that flame would come out. These rookies would be flying everywhere. Oh, my God, oh, my God, screaming and yelling. They had no idea what happened. One night he was doing it, and Garrison started laughing, and he struck the match, and his face just goes poof, and he just was on just a momentary fire. The next day, he had a peel job that lasted a couple of weeks. He didn't do that anymore.
He used to do limericks also.
Yes.
He was on my show, and he did a limerick once that I was on the floor laughing.
And whittle.
Yeah.
He was a big-time whittler. Never tell you his tricks.
Who were some of the other players along your career that you still kind of laugh and smile about when you think about them?
Don Talbert, who was a tackle with the Cowboys, was hilarious. There's Meredith, of course. I mean, I've got hundreds of Meredith stories. Another guy fun to play against was Dick Butkus, because he was he was out of his mind when he was playing. He didn't know who he was. The first thing he'd do when he'd come into the game, he'd go up and spit on the football. So the first thing he did when you went in, just say, please, you know, my center, change the ball, because he's going to, you know, Butkus is going to spit on it. And, boy, was he was mean. He came in the huddle at the end of the game, one game we were playing up there, and we had really thoroughly beaten him. Came in the huddle, and he challenged every guy on that team. He wanted to meet him outside gate 8. And everybody kind of looked down. Nobody was looking up. And he says, that means you too, Morton. I want you out there. So we go into the locker room to change, and I said, hey, where we go? What gate are we going out of? And the guy said, we're not going out gate number 8. So they all went around because they thought he was serious. And he might have been out there, but they weren't going to go around that.
One of the things that I love about sports is it lends itself to wonderful stories, and I think the money has probably changed it, that people – you know, the players don't get together like they used to. And I know Willie Mays once lamented the fact that you don't hear stories being told around the batting cage. And I think that has changed it a great deal. Let me switch gears and touch on something that you and I talked about a little bit earlier, the state of the retired ball players. You know, you're a guy, you know, that's been out of the league for a while now. You look like you're walking all right. But generally speaking, give me some insight about how the veteran players, the old players, feel about their state.
it's being so poorly addressed. I've had three knee replacements, maybe 18 knee operations, both shoulders and elbow, foot. But I just feel I can't complain. I mean, as long as I'm doing something, you know, I feel okay. A lot of guys aren't. A lot of guys can't walk. A lot of guys are just. A lot of guys chose the wrong pension plan when we first elected the pension because nobody knew what it was. Guys, they said the first time when we had a chance to elect what option we wanted in the pension plan, a lot of guys, nobody had ever received a pension plan because nobody had ever lived past 55. So everybody just made some bad decisions at first, and they multiplied, and then they just forgot about these guys that really need some help. I think they're addressing it a little bit better now. I think with Ditka's out there with his little group that's helping a lot. George Martin is now the alumni director, president of the Alumni Association. He's, you know, really involved. So I think that they're doing better. But a lot of people, you know, are Medicare, it's like I am, and so it's passing people up. They can't forget about it. These guys now have IRAs. They've got everything possible, which I don't begrudge them because, I mean, they're making money. But don't forget the older guys. I mean, these guys that have really, really bad handicaps and bad pensions, it doesn't cost anything to help them guys out at all.
When you take a look or hear or read about what an athlete has just signed for, that he's especially a quarterback, whether you're shaking your head, what do you think?
Just what my head's saying. first of all, it's how did it ever get to be this out of control? That you'd pay somebody $30-some million guaranteed that's never played a down. And you're not, why wouldn't you do that give that money to the veterans that played? I mean, it's only sensible. Who's competing against you? I mean, when they draft you, nobody's on the other side saying, okay, I'll give you $20 million, I'll give you $30. They're competing against themselves, and just the agents have got them by the toes, you know, and they're ringing them out. So I don't agree with it. They will fix it this time. The money ought to be going to the veterans or the older guys that need the money. The rookies do not deserve this kind of money. I mean, I think that they're great talents, but prove it and then make the money. But to, you know, Jamarcus just left the Raiders $40 million richer, and he couldn't throw across the street because he's so poorly fundamentally trained. And that's a lot of things that gripe us old quarterbacks, to see these guys come out that are not trained. They haven't played under the center. They're always shotgun. You can't just go from shotgun to playing in the center. And anybody that drafts a quarterback has got to realize it's going to take them a long time to get used to that. It's a whole new game.
We got about 90 seconds left, Craig. And is there a particular memory in your long career that is kind of emblazoned in your mind that either makes you smile or wince a little bit, or that you'll never, ever forget about playing professional football?
Well, yeah, I think the highlights are winning the championship games to go to the Super Bowl. And the one that really sticks out is against the Raiders in 1970. It was January 1st, 1978. I was in the hospital the whole week with a hip pointer that my leg was like 2 inches full of blood, my whole leg. And I never practiced one down that didn't ever get out. And a friend of mine came, picked me up Sunday morning, and I could barely even walk. And he said, what do you think? And I said, I don't think I could do this. He said, you've worked too hard in your life not to give it a try. So it was about 10 degrees out, 15. So I went to the training quarters, got in the hot tub. My leg was just completely black and blue. Made sure all my teammates saw it, laid on there and looked for sympathy. Coach came up to me, Coach Miller, he said, are you going to go? And I said, if you could tie my shoes, I'll play. And I said, don't let them hit me, guys, and we'll win the game, and we won it. And I mean, I cried like a baby after that. But that's just something, once again, mentally, it's amazing what you can accomplish.
Craig, I want to thank you very much for coming in and spending some time with us and talking about not only your career, but the state of football when you played the game. I loved watching you play. You really could unload that football a long way. You weren't too mobile, but you could really unload that football.
Got to know your strengths.
Craig Morton with us on Sports Byline. Again, 18 years in the National Football League as he played with the Dallas Cowboys. That's the team that drafted him. And then played a couple of seasons with the New York Giants and then had great success also with the Denver Broncos. And Roger Staubach, a quarterback that followed him with the Dallas Cowboys. John Elway following him then also with the Denver Broncos. And he was the first quarterback in the NFL's history to start the Super Bowl for two different teams, Dallas and Denver. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.